morning, everybody. You're welcome to the meeting. We are going to start by allowing all the general to take us through what they need to empower us on. I was not given the name, so I will not be able to introduce themselves. They will have to introduce themselves, sorry. And you're welcome, Mr. General. These are members of the committee. Feel free to give us and empower us so that we can then be able to do oversight better with the knowledge that you have given us. Thank you very much. You're welcome, and take us through.
My name is Bumiwabe, a member of this committee.
Good morning, I am Teddy Ramos Alfred, a member of the committee.
I'm Rosina Lumeya, the chairperson of the committee, and Ms. Liang Group represent the committee, not EA, in this committee for today.
David. Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Hamza Makhana, member of the committee.
Dengunkosu Zelveli Lemandle Sizwe Talibu Ngamande, hailing from the Eastern Cape province, the land of leisure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It makes it much easier to relate to the members and the questions that have been used for the members of the committee. Honorable Chair, as we have indicated, our purpose today is to have a discussion with the members and to empower the members and also share with the members our role at the AGSA. And the products that we have as directed by the constitution of the country, and also how we can engage with the members throughout the year and throughout the current year in holding the portfolio accountable and responsible for what is assigned to them and mandated to them. Chair, if we start we started a searchlight. As I had indicated that we will touch on what the role of overhead is, what our role is, and how together we can partner and enhance democracy and public confidence so that we can ensure that the citizens of our country are well looked after and well taken care of. If you look at the picture that we saw, we talked about the vote, which is specifically what we're talking about today, about the culture and the process that goes through, you know, up until the end of reporting. And what you see there is that the strategic plan, which then the department will identify the desired impact in terms of the objective of the department. The objectives of the department are informed by the mandate of the department, which is an executive requirement. And once the department has identified the objectives, the targets, and what the impact will be, which is through the specific performance indicator, then are then presented to the portfolio committee. And the portfolio committee then has a role in terms of establishing whether these objectives and performance indicators that the department has set for itself will meet the desired mandate of the department and whether they are aligned to the mandate of the department. What we normally look at, and this will also emphasize when we talk about performance information, is that legislation requires that the objectives must be predetermined. So it must be approved before the year starts, which means there must be proper planning beforehand, there must be proper engagement, there must be proper needs analysis before these objectives are set. And the next step is then to determine the budget for the department that is required to meet these objectives of the department. Ideally, what we are saying is that for each objective and each indicator, a budget must be allocated, because it makes it easier once we can link the objective and the target to the budget. So control it is much, much, much easier. But what we have found throughout the years that we have started reporting on performance information is that the departments are struggling to link the budget to the objective or the indicator. And as a result, most of the time when the targets are not met, the department will then indicate that there's budget limitation. But it's normally very difficult to it's normally very difficult to identify for the department to prove that there was limited budget. And what we also say is that the department, all the entities, they are the ones that establish these indicators. These indicators are not all of them. So if they do proper planning, they should also do proper budgetary planning that is sufficient for them to meet these targets that have been set for themselves. So they should be in a position to identify all the challenges that result in them not being able to meet these targets or the objectives. And they should plan on how they can then mitigate the risks and these challenges that they have in meeting the targets that they have. We then move over to implementing and in-year monitoring. On a quarterly basis, the department and the entity present their quarterly report to audit committee and to portfolio committee as well. And ideally, before they come to a portfolio committee on a quarterly basis, for the portfolio committee to do the in-year monitoring, do the in-year reporting, they should have processes in place where they perform daily checks and balances. And we later talk about these checks and balances when we talk about the key control, key indicator, these key checks and balances. Because they will have targets that are set per quarter. they need to then report on what targets they can achieve for the quarter. Those that they did not achieve, the reasons why they did not achieve them, and report on these. And the whole report on performing on financials, what has been done with the financials for the quarter, what we have achieved for performance in the quarter, is then reported to the audit committee and comes to the portfolio committee. Now, what we advocate from the AGSA is that because this information is reported to management, is reported to the audit committee before it comes to the portfolio committee, all these institutions within an organization must be in a position to give the portfolio committee assurance that the information that comes to the portfolio committee on a quarterly basis has gone through thorough checks and balances, and that is credible information and also complete information. Then, because when we go to year end, which is the next step that we talk about, year end reporting, where as the auditor general, as external auditors, we then come and audit. If they have gone through the thorough process of in-year monitoring, the daily checks and balances, daily, weekly, monthly checks and balances, when we get to the year end reporting, then the information that they prepared, which have gone through those monthly thorough checks, and will minimize the amount of misstatements that we normally identify through the audit. And in that, the organization would have implemented what we call systems of internal control. And systems of internal control are meant to prevent any omission or any duplication or any fraud and error for that matter. Because the person that would initiate a transaction, be it a financial transaction or a performance transaction, would not be the same person that records. So the one that initiates is not the same person that records. So the one that records will then check whether everything that was supposed to happen before recording did happen. And then comes the person that must then supervise, that evaluates and monitors and checks whether the reconciliations are done properly and regularly as well. So these checks and balances, we call them the daily, weekly, monthly disciplines by every individual within the organization to make sure that information that is presented is credible and complete. And as a result, information that is presented to the auditor general at year end for audit is therefore credible and complete. And the proposal that we also make to the portfolio committee is that when portfolios come and present their quarterly report to Parliament on a quarterly basis, it's advisable that the chair of the audit committee and internal audit is present in the portfolio committee. Because internal audit, in terms of their mandate, they need to make sure that internal control within an entity or a department is functioning the way that it is designed. And when they come to the portfolio committee, they must give the portfolio committee assurance that the system that the department or the entity has employed is able to produce credible and complete financial and performance information. And the audit committee as well, when they come, they will be able to give the portfolio committee assurance that information, the quarterly report that is presented to the portfolio committee has gone through the processes of checking whether the information is credible and complete, because they would have interrogated the information, and they will give the portfolio committee that information presented to them is credible and is complete as well. So that will give the portfolio committee satisfaction and assurance that what they see there is virtual and will not be subject to change. So you will see that on top of the year-end monitoring there, we have the way they assess and adjust. So what we are proposing is that if the in-year monitoring is effective, the assess and adjust will happen throughout, because if the department has not met its target, or if there are internal mistakes, they should be identified during the in-year monitoring. And that is identified through the audit should only be technical adjustments. Let me give an example. When we perform the audit and we identify material in the statement, whether to the financial statement or to the performance information, the PFMA requires that the accounting officer must present information that is complete and credible to the auditor general and must implement systems of internal control. So if the statement that we identify are because internal control failed within the department or within the entity, then we raise that as a non-compliance issue. However, if the adjustment is related to a technicality, for instance, the financial framework changed and there was misunderstanding or different interpretation of the financial framework, we call that a technicality, and it's not as a result of internal control that fails. However, it's due to a technicality, and we don't raise non-compliance. So the non-compliance that you see in the audit report, we say that material statements were raised on the financial statement or on performance information, it would be because internal control fails the department or the entity, and therefore so essentially, because of the financial year, the department will come and present the strategic plan to the portfolio committee. And as an oversight committee, the portfolio committee needs to assess whether the objectives and the indicators set by the department are achievable, whether there is sufficient budget in terms of those objectives to meet the objectives that were set by the department, and whether the budget process is aligned to what is in the strategic plan, whether the department must give the portfolio committee assurance that the resources that are employed by the department or the entity are sufficient and will be sufficient to deliver on the priorities of the department or the entity. And also, the department and the entity must identify any budget constraints and how they intend to deal with these budget constraints. And if there are any changes in the budget from 1 year to the other, we must also indicate what we've changed. What we have identified specifically, and eventual talk to that, was based on the outcome of the previous year's focus. What we have identified is that when targets are not met, previously, when targets are not met, they would then remove these targets from the next year's APP. Now, let me just go a step back and reflect on the financial statement. And when we report on the financial statement, we express an opinion whether the financial statement fairly reflects the financial position of the department or of the agency. Now, say for instance, there is a line item in the financial statement, and let's say that line item is there, receivable, that we are not comfortable with, that we feel it might be material mistaken, and therefore we need the qualification to say that except for this line item, the rest of the figures are okay, but except for this line item called data or receivable. The following year, when the department reports, they must have cleaned up the debtor balance from the previous year. So unless the debtor balance and the statements that we identified in the previous year are clean, we will not be able to say that the debtor balance for the following year is clean. So they need to clean up the previous year's mess before they get an unqualified opinion. However, when it comes to performance information, what we report on, we report on whether what the department has reported is credible, is complete, is reliable. That's what we are testing. We are not testing whether the department has met its time. And therefore, the department, in doing their own self-assessment, if they didn't meet the target, if we were reporting on, or if we were expressing an opinion on whether the department has met the target, clearly they need have been qualified. But we are reporting on whether what they have reported is credible and complete. However, they need to do the self-assessment and realize that we budgeted to meet 100 targets, for instance, and we only achieved 50. Therefore, what do we do with the other 50? Instead of throwing it away, which is what the department has historically done, they need to find a way to meet this target of 50. Because what we are doing, we are meeting the demands of the citizens. So, again, what it means is that if we plan to build fences around farms, and we target a specific farm where we will be building those fences, if we only achieve 50 out of the 100 farms that we initially committed to, we therefore didn't deliver on the other 50. So if we make this commitment to the citizens, what then do we say to the citizens? We could say, no, you forfeited it. We're not going to build that anymore. We have made a commitment. And hence, we have made a proposal during our engagement with the minister that when setting objectives and targets, we need to specify areas in which service delivery needs to take place so that we can be held accountable. And so we will also need to align it to a budget so that the budget of the state can be used economically so that we can achieve all the targets that we have set for ourselves. Okay, we spoke about monitoring and reporting. And I want to talk a little bit about the combined assurance model. What is combined assurance? Combined assurance is a level of assurance that every party plays in the outcome, in being assured in the outcome of an entity. Now, this is in three things. There's management assurance, which we say is the first level of assurance. And there's oversight assurance, and there is independent assurance. Now, if I talk to each one of you, when it comes to management assurance, we are saying that each level of management, at the first level of assurance, they are the people that are within the entity, they are the people that are within the department. And management must, because they are responsible for making sure that they have designed proper and effective systems of internal control, they implement effective systems of internal control that have been implemented. They monitor to make sure that these systems of internal control are operating effectively and are in a position to produce credible and complete financial and performance information. And I think throughout the presentation you will hear the emphasis on credible and complete information. Because this is the information that is reported to you, this is the information that management presents to you, this is the information that management must be held accountable for. And on all of these aspects, they need to make sure that there is effective leadership, there is effective financial management principles, there is effective governance. And through all of these systems that are within the organization, they are the key assurance givers within the process. And in terms of oversight, we think that the coordinating ministry, territorial committees, internal audit, not the portfolio committee, the treasury and the senior, this is now within in the province. Internal audit and audit committee, they give the second level of assurance. So what effectively what we are saying is management is guided approach. So they hold, they are the key to success of the voting, they are the foundation, they lay the foundation. And internal audit, audit committee and the treasury, they are then the second layer. So the information that goes to the portfolio committee, if it's credible, then these entities, internal audit, the audit committee and the national treasury, they will be able to perform their job and support the entity. And if internal audit and audit committees and treasuries are effective enough to support management as a foundation of this successful assurance model, the information that goes to the oversight that comes to the portfolio committee, we have gone through these two layers that are effective. And therefore, information coming to the portfolio committee will be credible, will be complete, will be packaged in such a way that it is communicated to the portfolio committee in such a way that the portfolio committee can understand and can hold management accountable. And it will come to the portfolio committee on time to give the portfolio committee sufficient time to prepare and to engage effectively with management based on this effective structure and type of foundation that has been laid by management in the department. What is our contribution to oversight? We as the AGSA, we commit to giving briefings to the portfolio committee. And these briefings will be on our project, on our audit report, and how to link these results that are reported in the annual report of the department and the entity to our own report. And this we do so that we can empower the portfolio committee to have effective materials before the BRR session. And also throughout the year, we commit to engaging with the portfolio committee to give progress on what the department and the entity have done throughout the year. What we have done previously, we meet contact with the chair, and we share the outcome of the interim audit with the chair, because it is, in terms of legislation, our products, our reports are not public before they are tabled in Parliament. It makes it difficult for us to share in a public forum of the portfolio committee, and then we share these outcomes with the chair on the one-on-one. However, if there is an opportunity to share with the portfolio committee at large, in a public forum, then we can do that, and that is what is advisable. However, because when the department presents their quarterly report to the portfolio committee, this is done in a public forum, hence we propose that the audit committee chair and the internal audit must be present, because the portfolio committee can then inquire from the internal audit whether the systems that the department and the entities employ are capable of producing the kind of information that is credible and complete. Before the APPs of the department are presented to the portfolio committee, we do review them. So we do a high-level review of the APP for the next year before it starts, and then we will present to the audit committee the deficiencies that we have identified. However, there are two elements that we look at when we look at performance information. Whether the objectives and the targets are useful, and we look at the SMART principles, and we'll talk about these SMART principles at a later date, and we also look at whether the performance information is reliable. However, the reliability portion we cannot report on unless there has been delivery and there is something to test. So the APP is about the objectives and the targets. We can only look at the usefulness of the APP, but not the reliability, because there is nothing to be able to get. However, the argument is that if the targets of the department are not useful, if they are not measurable, if they are not time bound, if they don't meet all of those qualities, it's going to be difficult for the department to report on these targets once you have six. So it is critical that right from the start we make sure that the targets of the department and the entity are optimized. Once we have reported on the, we have presented our pitch report to the portfolio committee. When the portfolio committee has hearings with the department, we do come and attend these hearings so that we can become witnesses to what we have reported in the financial statement, in case there are some contradictions and some deviations which we have seen during the time. On an annual basis, so this is a general, has a general report. A general report is a helicopter view of the public sector outcomes. So it would compare the outcomes of one department to another at a very high level, just to give an indication of where we take that compared to the other departments, where if we take entities of that compared to other entities, how do they compare? What are the general trends that we see within the public sector that the portfolio committee, for instance, is reviewing? We also do a regular follow-up on the implementation of resolutions, because once we have presented our report at the end, then we agree with management on the action plan that they need to implement to correct the findings that we have identified throughout the year. We also get commitment from the executive authority in how the executive authority will support the accounting officer and management in achieving audit outcomes. I've also spoken to the presentation with a check. In terms of the audit mandate, the AGSA, we get our mandate from the Constitution in terms of Section 118. We are a Chapter 9 institution, as we all know. We also get our mandate from Section 20 of the Auditor General, which indicates that, of the Public Audit Act, which indicates that we audit the financial statements and the financial condition. We need to also audit compliance with financial management, and we need to audit pre-determined objectives. What we do, as is done in the private sector, we report on financial statements and we express an opinion on financial statements as I have indicated earlier. We also audit performance information. We express an opinion in the management report of the entity and the department. We do not express an opinion in the audit report. What you will see in the audit report is the findings that are material. What does it mean? If you see findings on performance information in the audit report, then you would know that the opinion in the management report would either have been qualified, or would have been a disclaimer, or would have been an other. Now, an audit report that doesn't have findings on predetermined objectives, it means that the opinion would have been unqualified. However, that doesn't mean that there were no findings. The findings might have been immaterial when we assessed them in terms of our neutrality framework. Also, on compliance with rules and regulations, we focus on regulations that have a financial impact, and hence we say compliance and financial management. So if you see findings in the audit report on compliance with rules and regulations, these are material deviations from the education that we need to have to work on. So these are the things that we need to be concerned about. Okay. official help of the accounting officer to keep proper records in terms of the financial information. And it also requires the accounting officer to submit financial statements to the auditor general. And as I had indicated when I was talking about the combined assurance model, that management is the foundation of this information that is required to present. And as the auditor general, we are required to audit and report on the reports that are submitted by the accounting officer. The auditor general is then required in terms of section 4.1, the public contract, to audit reports and on the accounts and financial statements and financial management of all entities that are funded from national revenue or provincial revenue or any institution authorized by legislation to receive funds. And why am I saying this? There are entities that are funded from the national revenue. And I'm trying to think of an entity within that. Previously we had the ownership group of biological assets that was not audited by the auditor general. They had their own auditors. They appointed their own auditors because the public audit act allows entities that the auditor general historically didn't audit. So they would appoint their own auditors in consultation with the auditor general, and who are therefore not auditing them and not responsible for their audit. So while the auditor general is required in terms of the public audit act to audit these entities, there is a section 4.3 which allows the entity to appoint its own auditors in consultation with the auditor general. However, what has now happened is we get involved, even though we don't get involved in the audit, we get involved with these entities. We attend the audit committees because these entities are required to also report on performance information in compliance with prudent regulations, which is not normally done in the private sector. And because they are audited by private sector, we get involved to guide the auditors and management on how to deal with performance information and also with compliance with prudent regulations. We have come quite a long way with the public sector, and we have identified a number of areas where there are challenges in the public sector. And as the auditor general, we have now committed that we would walk hand in hand with the public sector and make sure that we achieve certain aspirations for the public sector. And through supporting the public sector and working with the public sector, we are saying that we will support the public sector to achieve all of these things. We talk about transparent and stable reporting, and this comes from the daily, weekly, and monthly reporting that we talk about. We've spoken about budgeting and planning processes, and this talking to the objectives and the indicators that are properly aligned to the budget so that there can be proper monitoring and reporting. We spoke about local information management platforms where internal audit and audit committee give assurance that proper credibility and completeness checks are done regularly and that information that is presented is credible and complete. We talk about strong internal audit capabilities. If we have a strong internal audit that is focused and is able to say that the internal controls that are designed, that are implemented, are monitored regularly, are able to produce information that is credible and complete. because to enable effective oversight. We also spoke about the foundation of management supported by a strong internal audit and audit committee to be able to present information that is critical for oversight, for effective oversight. Because if oversight is always focused on inefficiencies, always focusing on deficiencies within the department and the portfolio, the oversight committees are not able to make progress and to be able to ensure that the citizens that they represent receive the services that they are supposed to receive. So they are always focusing on inefficiencies within the department and progress is not made. So we need to make sure that we are achieving progress. Applying consequences for transactions and poor performance, this is the one other area that we have identified that there is a specific findings that come along a long way and identify it best presents the outcome of the department that changed in the past year. You notice that there are findings that are repetitive and were not taken care of, and we are not seeing consequence management and proper performance management within the public sector. This is the one area that needs to be strengthened within the public sector, which is effective performance management and consequences as well. We normally say that poor performance in some cases, yes, warrants consequences, and consequences is not only punishment. Consequences can also be training and development. If the training and development within the public sector is not effective, we definitely will not be in a position to achieve the excellence, the high performance culture that we want for the public sector. The essence of the high performance culture within the public sector. Flexible commitments are all there in the public sector. In the public service, it's generally critical, especially because we are a service-orientated organization. The flexible commitment to ensure service delivery is required. Demonstrate impeccable ethical behavior and professionalism. First, we have seen through the risk that we have in supply chain, and I will talk to that as well. Because if every service, every employee of the service, the public sector demonstrates ethical behavior and professionalism, we will be in a position to achieve the service delivery that we want, because every person will then perform the way that they are expected to perform. Independent and relevant reporting by the AG, I cannot overemphasize the necessity of the independence of the professional. And in terms of relevant reporting, we are saying that we need to be relevant to our stakeholders. And the oversight committee is our chief stakeholder. So we need to understand what the needs of the portfolio committees are so that we can report relevantly to the portfolio committee. Hence, this constant engagement with the portfolio committee is necessary so that we can get an understanding of what are the needs of the portfolio committee and we can be relevant to the portfolio committee. We also talk about value education, just the five sectors that the agency, and this is also to enable oversight to be able to hold the public sector accountable. In terms of the Public Audit Act, as the AGFA, we are responsible, we are accountable to report to the National Assembly, and hence this engagement with the portfolio committee is very, very necessary for us. And in terms of our operations as well, as the auditor, we have a committee that oversees the auditor general, where the auditor general reports to in terms of we are held accountable as over, in terms of our finances and in terms of our performance as well. So we also have predetermined objectives that we report to Parliament, and we come on a quarterly basis to present our quarterly report to us, and we are held accountable by SCOBA as well in terms of our budget and in terms of our government function. We've spoken about the stability of the AGSA, the mandate, which is the interaction something that we have. What do you agree in terms of our program? If I can just briefly dwell into the process that we follow when we audit. As we audit, we raise a finding. And when we raise a finding, we will indicate what the root cause of the finding is. For instance, let's take an example that I spoke about earlier of data that I'm less grateful. We will then indicate what the root cause of the statement is. It could either be that there are no proper skills within the finance or within the data section, or there is no proper supervision, monitoring, and evaluation by the supervisor. Things like that. We will indicate what they are. And then we get to the internal control, which we categorize in three sections. It would be the leadership part, the financial management, which is the daily, weekly and monthly checks and balances that I talked about, and the governance, which is the effectiveness of internal audit, audit committees, and risk assessment. Then we will classify them into these internal in key controls, internal control classification to indicate what it is. And then is what we do to make sure that management can identify specifically what has gone wrong so that they can go to the root and fix the root and not only the symptom. Because what normally happens is the management will fix the finding as we raise it, but not fix the root of the problem. Like, if I can give an example, the most common one relates to supply chain. And where we identify irregular expenditure because legislation was not followed to the call. So what entities then do, they will still engage in irregular transactions instead of fixing the policy if the policy is not aligned, or instead of disciplining people that disregard legislation, they then identify transactions that are irregular and disclose them, rather than correct the root of the problem. So they become more reactive than proactive in making sure that the deficiency doesn't recur. They don't fix the root. And that is the major problem in the public sector of our health. In terms of the work that we do, the product that we have as well as the agency, we have what we call regulatory audit, which is mandatory. And this emanates from, as I said earlier, from the Constitution and from the Public Audit Act and from the PSMO. Regulatory audit, our focus in terms of regulatory audit is on financial statements, so we express an opinion, it's on performance information, and it's on compliance with rules and regulations. We also have discretionary projects, and this would come in the form of performance audits. We also can do performance audits, and performance audits are different from audit of predetermined objectives. As I have said, audit of predetermined objectives focus on service delivery, the targets that the department or the entity has set for themselves to achieve, and we audit whether what they have reported as they. And the achievement is indeed what they have achieved. Performance audits are related to the three E's. We audit economy, efficiency, and effectiveness. Whether the resources were procured in an economic and efficient and effective way and are utilized in an economic and efficient and economic way. So that is performance audit. And performance audit will be done on a focus area. They are not done for the entity as a whole, but we become on a focus area. For instance, we would audit procurement of tractors for the agriculture to see whether the tractors were procured in an economic and efficient and economic way and were utilized again in an economic and efficient manner. So it's a focus area. Historically, the performance audit in the AGSA is taking a very, very long time. So because it's a critical area, we found that I think utilization is very efficient. So we are now incorporating some aspect of performance of into regularity budget so that we can identify what the three is that we can incorporate into regularity budget and report on the regularity budget to speed up the process. So we also have specific focus within performance of that we will incorporate into regularity budget. In terms of investigation, in terms of the legislation, the AGSA can conduct an independent investigation, but it's at the discussion of the AGSA. However, currently, we haven't performed a lot of investigations, but if there is a request that is directed to the Auditor General himself, we will then approve whether we do this audit. And there are also federal audits and these agreed upon procedures, donor funding requests, where the donors will request that we do a specific audit on some donations that they have given. So these are the type of products that we have. Okay. We have touched on what do we do and what do we not do in terms of regularity audit? Indicated that we provide assurance on financial information, whether there are three from material misstatements. We report on usefulness and reliability of information on annual performance report. We report on material non-compliance. We identify key internal control deficiencies to be addressed. So if there are findings in the three areas that we report on, then we will indicate what is the key internal control deficiency, the root cause of the funding being raised in the three areas that we report on. Because we audit on a sample basis, we don't audit 100% of the transactions for financial performance information and compliance with regulations. We do not provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with. And I have said we focus on laws and regulations that have a financial impact, but we don't audit all legislation, operational legislation. And we also don't identify fraud, but we do have procedures to identify indicators of fraud. And if we identify indicators of fraud, we will then recommend a forensic investigation. But our normal procedures are not designed to identify fraud. And if we do identify fraud through our procedures, then we will also recommend the forensic investigation. And as I indicated earlier, we do not provide assurance that service delivery has been achieved, but we do provide assurance that what has been reported is accurate. So if the department reported that our target was 100, we only achieved 25, we will go and verify whether they indeed achieved 25, but we are not saying that service delivery has been achieved. Just in a nutshell, the timelines of the regulatory audit, because this is the mandate we want and we do it on a yearly basis. The year and in terms of the TFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, and for the national department and the provincial department and public entities, it's the 31st of March. And in terms of the legislation, the audit must be complete and the report must be issued by the 31st of July. And as I had indicated, I've made reference to the general report that the audit and my report on which is an agreed corporate view of all the entities that we audit. Previously, we used to target the first quarter of the following year to issue the general report. However, we are working towards bringing it forward, and this day targeted to be tabled in Parliament in November, and this is how we want to be more relevant to the stakeholders so that it can be dealt with as quickly as possible, so that oversight can have a helicopter view as soon as possible before the start of the new calendar year, because in the new calendar year, then we start focusing on the industry. On this note, Chair, can I then hand over to Yvette? to take us through, it gets into the details of the department, and she's more conversant with the details than what we have to do to the details of the department.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I will pass off, as Macy has already alluded to, the three areas of our financial statement audit focus. We thought of our financial audit, which we have indicated that we have a constitutional mandate and it's mandated by public audit, and we are expressing opinion on the financial statement in terms of the applicable financial reporting framework. We secondly look at predetermined objectives, which is as indicated in the service delivery issues, which we focus on the areas of reliability and usefulness of the information that is reported in both the strategic planning phase as well as the annual performance report, which is reported as year end. We thirdly look at the compliance with laws and regulations, which as they just indicated, focus on, we will report only on the material non-compliance with laws and regulations. Then we speak about a term called group administration, or alternatively referred to as a team audit opinion. A team audit opinion would mean we don't only look at a financially unqualified audit opinion, but we also look at why is the money spent in terms of a key laws and regulations, and why there should also be no material findings on the performance report, which should be the term objective. So as we, if we refer to a team audit, we will say that the financial statement is free from material on the statement, as well as there is no material finding from both compliance and predetermined objective. If we look at the different types of audit opinions, we firstly look at unqualified or unmodified audit opinion. This refers to a set of financial statements that presents fairly, in all material respects, the financial statement of that department or entity in terms of the applicable financial reporting framework which the entity department uses. If, for example, the department or entity receives an unqualified opinion, but there is an emphasis of matter reported in the audit report, the emphasis of matter would not affect the opinion of the department or entity. It will still be an unqualified or unmodified report. Then we look at a qualified report, or otherwise known as an except for opinion. This would mean that there is agreement with management in terms of the way they have reported in terms of the financial reporting framework in a specific area. So if you take Macy's example of debtors balance may be materially misstated, but it only affects the debtors. So you will then issue an except for opinion saying that the financial statement as a whole is free from material misstatement except for the debtors balance, which is material but not pervasive. Then the two other opinions which we get is our disclaimer and adverse. The first such on a disclaimer opinion, this means that there is a lack of supporting documentation to enable us to express opinion. So we therefore say we are able to express opinion due to the lack of supporting evidence to support that has been reported in the financial statement. Then lastly, we get the adverse audit opinion. The adverse audit opinion, other than a qualified audit opinion, is the misstatement is not only material, but it's also pervasive, in the sense that we are unable to state that financial statement is a fair reflection of the financial position, performance, and cash flow statement. If we then look at our audit of predetermined objectives, there is three main criteria which we look at when we start with our audit of predetermined objectives. The first one is the compliance with regularity requirements, which is your local regulation. For example, if you look at FPO or predetermined objectives, we look at the framework for FMPPR, the framework for managing program performance information issued by National Treasury, or as well as there's a framework for strategic plans and SPs, which is also issued by the National Treasury. For example, we look at does the strategic plan and any performance plan that exist, is it approved by executive authority, etc. We then move on to the usefulness criteria, which just ask the question, is the strategic plan and annual performance plan useful? If you look at the fourth criteria underneath usefulness, it starts off with presentation, which presentation would mean is annual performance plan reported in such a way that is in line with National Treasury requirements. for example, if you look at presentation, we also look at whether they reported on reason for variance. In the post period, that's what they had struggled with, where the reason for variance has been reported either for if the target was not achieved, for example, 100, a target was 100, they only achieved 50, so they provide the reason in the annual performance report why they didn't reach the 100 target. The measurability criteria speaks mostly on the SMART principle, which asks you if the target objective and indicators that were set in the strategic plan is it specific, is it measurable? Thus, using measurability speaks about is the information to support verifiability. So thus, are you able to measure the 100 formats that has been planned for? Will there be 40 documentation to prove the 100 formats were indeed trained? Relevance speak about does the target talk to the mandate of the department, and consistency speaks to the annual, the strategic plan, annual performance plan that was set up at the planning stage, that is agreed to what was reported in the annual performance report at the year-end reporting. Then the last criteria which we focus on is reliability. Reliability talks to what has been reported at quarterly or at year-end, either 14-month report as well as in the annual performance report. Are we able to verify that what they have reported is valid, accurate and complete? Talking to is there supporting documentation available to prove that the 100 formats or 50 formats were trained. If we then move to our auditorium structure, which now summarizes all that we spoke about this morning, is we start off with the most important part is where we express the opinion on the financial statement, and they sometimes can be evidence of matter, additional matter paragraph that can be included. As I mentioned, is that the evidence of matter or additional matter paragraph does not affect the opinion of the department or entity. It only emphasizes to the user that they, as I can give an example of evidence of matter paragraph, is if they have changed the, if you are doing reporting for this year, but the current year, the prior period figures have been changed, then we will add a paragraph as an emphasis of matter stating that just alerting the reader of the audit report that there have been changes made to the prior year figures. That is not affecting the opinion of the financial statement. Then we also report on the material findings for predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. As Maisie has mentioned, is that we only report on the material findings, we do not express an opinion on those two matters. We then also report the material internal control deficiencies or root causes that led to the findings on three areas, the financial statements, the predetermined objectives, as well as compliance with laws and regulations. We report it under the three headings, named leadership, financial performance management, and governance. Then lastly, if there was any other audits that we were involved in, for example, as mentioned, claims the investigation, performance audit, or leadership on procedure to perform, we will also include that in the our audit report.
So why did
they
have I don't want to sort of dwell in the opinion that you said to just input. By way of an example of a hospital scenario that one of the MEPs used a while ago. We talk about the clean audit outcome. We talk about unqualified with findings. We talk about qualified, and then we talk about clean one or unqualified. So that the clean one, the unqualified clean one, is when we give an example, we say, if you, as a human being, you go for a check, everything is checked, everything is perfect, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you, you are in perfect health. So that is unqualified clean. And then unqualified finding, you go to the doctor says, you must look out, there is this threat. You have a business. If you don't take care of it, it will lead you into trouble. So you need to take care of your health. So you need to go to the doctor constantly, you need to take medication, and you need to take care of your health. In a qualified scenario, it could be, say for instance, you had a broken leg, so you have to be in hospital, to be looked after in hospital, to be taken. So some serious intervention is required. So as a qualified, when an area is qualified, the focus area that is qualified, but it needs attention, so it's going to be prepared. In a disclaimer or adverse opinion, this is an individual that is in ICU. So the total body is dysfunctional. So as Yvette said, there is misstatement relating to the, it affects the majority of the financial statement. So major intervention is required in this instance. So that's a disclaimer or an adverse opinion. And in most cases, it's very, very difficult to come out of a disclaimer situation because it requires a lot of intervention and a lot of work. In most entities, you will see that they have a number of consultants to assist them to get out of a disclaimer or an adverse opinion. And in all of these instances, as an AG, we have identified six areas that we say they are impediments to the first category, which is unqualified and clean. And the first area that is very, very critical is a material assessment to the financial statement and reading and objectives. And as I have indicated, this comes as a result of lack of daily, weekly, monthly certification to make sure that recording is done appropriately, the proper supervision, the monitoring and evaluation, and the proper resources. The second area is supply chain. Supply chain is the highest risk that results in irregular payments, that results in fraud and error, that results in a number of things. So that's the second area that is the higher risk, that we say is an impediment to clean audit outcomes, because most of the entities, if not the majority of the entities, and the departments, they have the same regular transactions. And the third area is obviously predetermined objectives, and that most entities do not meet the smart control certificate code and the liability criteria they also don't meet. Previously, we used to make an emphasis of met, however, targets were not met, we didn't do it in the current year. However, it's a critical area, it's never been able to be quite critical. The fourth area is IT control. As we know, we are in the area of high-tech area, where technical services are used to a very dependent on. So the accounting and performance reporting are highly dependent on IT. So if the IT system that is employed by the department or the entity is not effective to produce reliable and credible information, and proper IT governance structures are not followed, we cannot have proper reporting issues. The third area is HR management, and we spoke about performance management. And performance management is the critical one. Because you start with contracting, performance contracts that are linked to the strategic plan of the department, because the human beings that you employ, you use to produce or to achieve your targets. So if there are no proper HR management processes, you will not be in a position to achieve your targets. So HR processes, HR management must be very, very effective. So that's the other area. And the skills as well. People must be properly skilled and all of that. And the last area is the financial health. And we have seen this in a number of entities. And I've also mentioned earlier that most departments and entities, when they don't meet their targets, they cite budget constraints as a reason for not achieving their targets. So financial health is very, very critical. We've done an assessment earlier on some of the departments. And what we did, we took the budget for the year, for the department and the entity. We took our personal costs. we do not accrue. Accruals are expenditure coming from the previous year that was not paid from the previous year. They have to pay in the following year. We took out accruals. We didn't take out commitments, because commitment is what the department or the entity has committed to. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it will be paid within the 12 months. But in some cases, that's the requirement, it must be paid within the 12 months. And what is left when you took out accruals and personnel costs? We thought that it wasn't sufficient to meet the targets that the department has set for themselves.
Mm.
So right from the start, that's the procedure.
To continue and to close off before we move on to the fourth audit outcomes of the DAF portfolio, we will just briefly speak about the finishing process and what tools is available to the committee to gain an understanding before going into a briefing session. There's five elements of the screen, which is your state of the nation address, your budget features, your annual report, which includes your audit report, performance report, the briefing notes that we provide to the committee with, as well as the accounting officers and audit committee's report, which is published in the annual performance report, provide tools to the committee to gain an understanding and to help the committee with the briefing process. And then we say, if you have an effective briefing process, as a minimum, these five factors must be in place. So the first one talk about the reporting of departments and entities. And as we focus on a lot, we say that the reports, the annual reports of the entity should be credible, should be reliable, accurate, and complete. We as the AGA, we audit the annual performance report, ensuring that these reports are both accurate and complete. The second part is to ensure that the understanding the mandate of the entities by the oversight committee, which is through the feedback I've mentioned on the two slides, we say that it gain understanding through the study of the annual performance report, the annual financial statement, and the annual report as a whole. Then when it comes to the actual briefing process, the AGSA, in our briefing, we provide the reports of why the findings took place. We will explain what is the root of the problem, why did the findings occur. And on top of the report, of course, we link it to our key focus areas, which may be explained, as well as we, at the end, provide recommendations to address these internal control deficiencies that we have reported on. Then the next step is to recommend actions by the oversight committee. The action plan should be set in place, and the recommendations must also, when we spoke about the audit settlement objective, we spoke about the SWOT principle, and we are saying that the recommendations that is recommended should also be SWOT and have set milestones or have deadline for implementing those recommendations. And finally, the action plan by entity monitor the progress of these action plans. And the entity's action plan should also have set milestones, set delivery date of when to achieve these action plans. Then we start with the DAF portfolio and the fourth previous audit outcomes. Just to mention that we didn't include the 1340 audit outcomes due to not yet being tabled in Parliament, so we will focus on the 2013 towards the 2011 audit outcomes. The picture on screen you will see it explains or it shows the past history in terms of what we just explained on the how many audits were sitting in the financial unqualified with findings section, how many were sitting on a clean audit or the green box is talked about the financially unqualified with no material findings. The picture shows us that although in the 2010-11 financial year there was a qualified audit opinion which was addressed in the two following financial years, financially unqualified risk findings, the yellow part, increased a lot. So the clean audit reduced in the past 3 years. Then looking in detail of the 2012-13 audit outcomes, if you can start off with the department itself, you will see that The audit outcome was a financially unqualified with findings audit outcome, and it is shown that it was an unchanged audit opinion. It indicated that there was a lot of reoccurring findings that took place, that through the process of accident and performance management and poor performance management wasn't in place. If you look at the department had both findings on the usefulness and the reliability part of performance information. If you talk about the Department of Agriculture, their main concern in the department is the predetermined objectives area, is that they are unable to provide valid, accurate and complete information to support the annual performance report, to support the targets that have been presented in the report. Then there was also findings on compliance with laws and regulations. If I can focus on the internal audit, function of the department was not as effective as it could be for the year. There was findings on expenditure management, which talks about irregular expenditure on supply chain, specifically as a result of supply chain management process that wasn't followed in terms of the required legislation. And finally, in the financial statement side, there was material misstatements in the financial statement. If you look at the entities under the control of the department, you will see that most of them was financially unqualified with findings, either on findings on laws and regulations or findings on predetermined objectives. The only clear audit opinion that was issued in the 2012-13 financial year was the PPECD audit that was a clean audit report. If we move to the key control statement for the 2012-13 financial year, if you look at the three levels, which start off with, which is the leadership, financial management, and governance, you said that the key deficiency noted was the following. In leadership, you said that management didn't ensure that the internal audit function of the department had the proper resources and was properly skilled in order to properly execute their mandate. If I can give an example, the internal audit function of the department should look at the quarterly monitoring report before it gets to the audit committee, before it goes to the portfolio committee, to enable those committees to have assurance that the internal control processes that is in place was actually functioning. If you look at financial management, we again reported that the key daily and monthly checks wasn't working due to inadequate skills and processes in place to ensure that the financial statement as well as the annual performance report is credible. There was a commitment made by the department to implement and address the material that you have made to the financial statement that you have made progress on, but the performance information is still a key problem at the DAFRA program. Then there was also non-compliance of automated regulations. As I said, this was mainly due to the supply chain management practices that was not followed. If you look at the governance structure of the DAFRA program, the key control that was reported there was firstly that the risk assessment for that year wasn't in place and wasn't prepared. So therefore, the internal audit function couldn't perform their mandate of following a risk-based audit approach. Finally, just mention again that about internal audit function which was inadequately resourced and skilled. We cut the report where, in the beginning, we spoke about the combined assurance model. We set out the recommended actions to be taken by each level of management, each level of assurance provider that should be implemented by the department in order to, at the end of the day, move towards that clean audit opinion. If you look at the management assurance level, we said that management should ensure that there is daily checks and balances in place, not only to ensure that the financial statement is valid, accurate and complete, but also especially the performance information is credible. There should also be a process of consequence management for non-performance. I think Matthew explained the concept to say that there is, if you look at the picture of the DAFRA portfolio, there is a lot, there's many reoccurring findings happening within the portfolio, and the actions should be implemented and monitored to ensure that these reoccurring findings do not reoccur again. then we say that management should have a detailed action plan in place to address these deficiencies that was identified. This action plan must have key set milestones with the date of when this action plan will be implemented and addressed. And then finally, management should ensure that the internal audit function of the department is capacitated with people with the required skill and knowledge of all quarters of both financial statements and predetermined objectives. If you move on to the second level of assurance, which is your oversight assurance, we talk to the internal audit committee, where we say that internal audit should look at the quarterly monitoring report before it is submitted to this committee, to ensure when the report comes to this committee that it was quality assured, that it was assured that the information reported in that report is valid, accurate, and complete. We also recommend that the audit committee address what must also monitor the risk and monitor the action plans that management has put in place. And the report finally should ensure that these two oversight functions, the internal audit and the audit committee, should function fully and effectively throughout the financial year. And finally, when we move to the independent assurance level, your third level of assurance, we recommend that this committee also review and monitor the quarterly progress and the implementation of action plans which management has set out, to monitor them against the milestones that they have set. Thank you very much. That is the end of our presentation.
Thank you very much. Can we have a 3 minute lecture? I'm taking my
Good, there is no time.
No, on the left side, So now I be there for 2 days.
No. Up to yesterday.
Thank you, honorable member. Can you let me take the opportunity to thank members of AG for good presentation. So I'm going to allow members to interact with the presentation. Let's get to a question for clarity and discussion. It's not limited, we have a plenary, so it's not all the interaction is limited. Can I, honorable thing, can members raise hands so that we don't provoke the other members? Let's do that. Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you to the Office of the Auditor General for coming and explain Chair, I think all the situations obviously know my kind of line of questions in an ongoing battle that I've been fighting. But I also think it is up to us as a portfolio to try and get to the bottom of some of the issues. My question would be specifically regarding two or three things. The one was on this regularity audit, the mandatory one, and then the other one is performance audits, investigations, and special audits. Who decides, or how does it happen that you do these performance audits, investigations, and that? If we can just get a bit more clarity on that, at what point, or who can initiate something like that? And I think the Ms. Mika will remember, just for the clarity, or maybe of this committee, I asked in the past specific questions about money that was spent by the department, and I asked certain questions, and I received terrible answers to that specific point on the 10 million rand, the food parcels that was given by the department. And I asked the department to provide me with this whole document, and I got basically nothing. So my question is that the kind of investigation that you can ask for, I think any member of the operation is a normal route, or what is coming out of your thing. And it's due to the following thing that I had a problem with, and I didn't very carefully mention something like a helicopter view. And I think that will bring me to the last point, Chairman, which is, if you basically hover just about and make sure that the information, that it is the performance or the compliance only on reporting on what they have reported. But there are gaps in between, I presume. Because you can only make a finding on what has been reported. So if all the things that's not reported on is maybe more than what has been reported on, and that's what you can investigate on, how can the department still have unqualified opinion? Now, if you could actually explain the unqualified and the qualified, how many findings or things might a person have, and what must be the severity of the findings so that you move from unqualified to qualified? And I can't understand that whole thing. If there's so many findings, and the findings is so, I would almost say, severe, in the sense that the finding can say that there is no source documents, or you could not trace this, or there was no, I know last time we discussed the practice, but I know it wasn't a problem with that. But in practice, it was the money or the source documents for the buy of the practice, but you can't find the practice. But you still get an unqualified opinion. I just don't understand this thing. It's maybe for the first time someone can try and explain to me, there's a gap somewhere, between the department that set out to have targets, you achieve 20% of the targets, you spend 90% or 99% of the budget. So the Auditor General's office only investigates what is put in front of them, but the 80% is not there, and to still get an unqualified opinion. That's basically what it boils down to. And it really, I don't know, we need assistance on where and how, and then lastly, we need to get the internal auditors. Is that called the internal auditors?
Mm-hmm.
There was no internal auditors for 5 years. I don't even think that committee actually sat within the department, so we need to get that checked, because I think it's quite an important issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. My question is not historical. I would just want to get some clarity. The first one, Chair, is that I just want to find out what is the relationship between AG and the Treasury when it comes to the department's accountability now. Because I know there is a place where Treasury is coming in, doing its own support, work, and so on and so on. But at the end of the day, I just want to find out if there's any point where both are able to sit, discuss department report, and see where they are common and come up with a one way of corrections. Now, the second one, I just want to clarify myself from both presenters. I think that I initially heard the first presenter. I'm sorry, the name is not just there. Yeah, if I heard you well, you said you are not actually reporting on liabilities. If I heard you, okay, on liabilities also. But now, the second lady mentioned also that they from the I also talk about accuracy, the validity of the thing. Now, I'm very much confused there. The other thing you mentioned that you only do findings on material things, and then so even there, if maybe we can get more clearer examples of. What is that material outside what has been? I think what was mentioned there was quite little to make me feel okay that is this material or not. So I just want to become exact. Now, you also mentioned an issue around variances, and usually when we speak of deviations, are this what is deviation variance? And maybe an expression of, because my understanding from where I come from was that some of these decisions will happen under very extreme circumstances and so on, but at some point you find departments deviating, have to get things going from time to time. So if you can maybe put more emphasis on how at least you should go on in trying to edit. The last one is around the issue of the regional offices. Now, regional offices in which sense in the provinces where the issue of financial management in accuracies are mentioned. And maybe I just want to come in. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Just one question for you. That I think that it's a general question. There was an empathy, Mama, that you, and I know that you look at how we use funds as government. You are not looking at the results of service delivery. I accept that that the office is designed in profession. But for me, tightening the use of funds is fine, but without of why we allocate funds to departments. Its main purpose is to service deliver. I just wish that at some point, one day, that there will be this alignment between a clean way of handling books and finances. And effectiveness of that to service delivery. I wish that can be done. I know if it's something that is not entirely in your area of work, maybe politicians must deal with that. Because we think that particularly in province, at least where we were, you find that because of that fact, there will be clean audits and no service delivery. And that is the problem. So I think maybe that will have to be looked at a particular stage. But I think the presentation was okay. It's always a problem in this whole thing on how officials of the department are handling the matter, both in terms of deliberately doing the things or because of capacity. And I wanted to check, because you yourself, when you're making a presentation, you mentioned the areas, the south, east, and that. If there is this tight link, because the intention is to ensure that funds are utilized properly, and therefore if the people who are charged with that task are not capable of doing it, I think we need to assist them from all angles, including AG. And just share with us if you do have that thing. Training and or sharing of expertise. I know the AG, past AG. This is the past AG, Mbembe. The former. You know, this is English. The former. the former AG was, I'm from the Eastern Cape, was always saying the problem with why the results are like this. The problem is both political leadership at the level of municipalities. He was talking about municipalities. It was right. Results are right. And the key issue was political leadership as in municipalities, as well as leadership in the administration. And therefore, if we want to improve, we then need to deal with the second one, which is administrative. Political, it's our baby.
Maybe just to add questions to them. One, you said that you do have when the department, before they submit their APC to Legislature or Parliament, you assess them. And I'm not sure there is in that too. I'm very worried if was the APC that you get not or maybe how you formulate indicators or because in the province that I came from, I usually find that I cannot sit in a meeting to evaluate people saying they've attended 20 meetings. It will say the target 20 meetings. So I must sit here and say, yes, in these days I attended 20 meetings. How does it help me as a member of legislature? Because I must be the oversight. So for me it has been a very difficult process to engage with. And I want to agree with the Honorable Hansen that there is a need to look at how we balance these issues with maybe if this all role players work together, we can manage to deal with some of the things because and I'm not even surprised that the department they can't even link those indicators to budget. Because how do you link the numbers you see to the budget when your budget is saying you want to set that up? So this is becoming difficult. So I'm not sure what needs to be done, because unless we correct that, our work gets corrected will continue to be the same, because we do not actually have a clear cut what is it that we have to deal with, whether we should indicate a bit, because our minds were treated, hoping that I'm representing those that are sitting here. I would want services to see tangible things on the ground, and for me to be a big old. So if you show me books with number of people, et cetera, no service delivery, I don't see how I can. But the other issue is this term of the Asian. In the province that I come, at some point I was questioning one man who was saying, I've been getting the claim to the municipality was a stuff. At least now, I'm better. I've got a better disclaimer. He said, who has a better claim? I'm not sure why it's now you, because this thing of natural synthesis, if a person is dead, God, natural synthesis, faith, tomorrow gets worse, then they turn off in agriculture. Is this improvement? If you still have metal synthesis, you have to see. Let's say you get 12 or 10. This is improvement. So I think even though because it's some of the things that make our official not to do the work, because they know the dark behind this terminology. The other thing is, I think the question, Leander, the first, is your relationship with Treasury. Is it Treasury? We are the ones that formulate the strategic plans for the and I believe they have responsibility to capacitate, because they have the role of oversight as Treasury. And they have the role to capacitate departments in formulating these strategies and APPs. But I don't see whether it's Auditor General or whether it's other control committee taking Treasury to talk about what they must do to help departments. Because for me, we're not reach a level where you can then be part of the APPs that you find. I'm not speaking about National Parliament, because I will speak about the previous work, because for now, I'm still going to engage with them so that I must not be misrepresented. And the AG, because it's functioning throughout the country, you might want to look at this thing, because one way or another we have been affected as National Parliament, because in areas of government function where we have to department has to give provinces money, we are unable as a committee to trace those funds because of this thing against smart and smart. If smart is the number of meetings, I don't know what smart is. Maybe it will help us to understand this thing better. Now I've got this historical problem, all of the things that I've been trying to understand. But nonetheless, to say that actually the presentation was in between, then be able to, even before we respond, because there are areas that we identify which we need to follow up with the department. So we'll do that. Over to you, Auditor General.
Thank you, I will do my best to answer all questions completely. I would like to start with the issue of materiality, reciprocity. When we talk about that, we determine the materiality level. The materiality level is the acceptable error rate. So we set a limit to say, this is the error rate that we would accept for our audit, for the financial statement, or for performance information for that matter. So, as we raise findings and we identify deficiencies or balances to what we have calculated versus what has been reported, and if the department doesn't make adjustments, either to the financial statement or to the performance information, whatever is unadjusted. So we, at the end, we aggregate it to see if it's above or below our materiality level that we have. If it is below the materiality level that we have said, we will not report. Taking into account that we would not have audited 100% of the transaction, so we would have audited a limited amount. So it's based on that. If we audit 100% of the transaction, we'll never be able to finish it. So if that amount is above the materiality level, then we will report. So that's how materiality works, and that's how what you know on the ground and compared to what we have audited by this fund, because we have audited 13% of the total population, and this reporting is based on the tempo that we have
received.
Now, the difference between the variances and the deviation, I think that would be twofold. In terms of the variance, and let me take the annual performance report of a department, where they report their achievements, such as the target. So they always indicate that this is the target that we have set in terms of the ACP. So we will agree that this target is what's on the APP, and this is what has been achieved. In terms of what has been achieved, we will then select a sample again to go and verify that there are documents that indicate that that achievement was indeed for the department, and that what they have recorded doesn't exist. So we said, there are documents that say that the department did indeed purchase trackers, and these trackers do exist. Or training did take place, there are invoices from the trainer, and we do see an attendance register where the trainee signs that they did attend. I think what we have done previously, we would phone the trainee to verify that they did attend. And in some instances, we say that no, we want to know about the training. So we went at the time. So that's what happened. And then there was a court, the variance, the difference between the target and what they achieved, and the variance, and then they would indicate the reason. So the reason as well, we must be in a position to audit. If they say we didn't have sufficient budget, we need to be able to link that for this target, so much was set aside. However, the training cost more than anticipated, so the money was exhausted before all the training could be done. Frankly speaking, matters for you to obtain most of the time, because you should know. And yes, in most instances, when consultants that are using the public sector hear that this is a government initiative, the prices go up. So we do enough work to make sure that we get services or goods at the best price, or at the appropriate price, not at the price of 3 times or 5 times or 10 times what it should be. Now, the other element of variance would be, in terms of the financials, what they have reported, that is what we can you, but let me give you an example in regular expenditure. As I have said, instead of them correcting the root, then they would proactively go and identify regular expenditure and dissociate regular expenditure. Because again, if they only identify only regular expenditure to report, and we as the auditors identify regular expenditure as an internal control deficiency, so it's non-compliant. So then it hits them twice. It's regular and non-compliant in that they did not identify or prevent it. So they will go and identify it to avoid material adjustment. So if they go and identify, then we identify additional. So that would be a barrier factor because it's different. But they will go and adjust so that they don't get a non-compliant, let's say, if there was material adjustment to the financial system. So they will go and adjust the financial system so that they can then match. And in terms of the deficiencies, deviations would be more compliant in that they deviated from typical. They procured goods and services contrary to what the regulation required. Or they disclosed in the financial contrary to the financial standards or purposes. So they deviated from the reporting framework. They deviated from the legislation. So that it did not comply in putting there.
That's on the authority that's happened. Because now there would be where it is set. That is allowed, but in this manner. It's a deviation with motivation, something like that. Usually you find most of them in the department. They have gone the other route, and then they submit motivation. How does it link?
Who is the PSM?
So that's why you have the deviation all the time. So PSM gives them the right to. For example, if there's an emergency, they can deviate from the tender process. The PSM may allow the DG to deviate, but they must be reason they cannot be proved as an emergency.
Yeah.
So deviation is allowed in the ticket. So this is also compliance related. Okay. In terms of the role of the AGSA, that's the national trigger. specifically when it comes to performance information, I do know that national treasury has training initiatives on critical objectives, specifically on how to fetch them. And they also have standard criteria that say that for every target, there must be an outcome. And because we have challenges where the department would have an outcome, but would give us proof, because they need to prove that we did achieve this outcome. But the proof that they give us as an indication that they achieved could not be able to justify that this is what they have achieved. So what National Treasury has now done, they have said, if you set yourself an outcome, you must also indicate what would be the evidence that you are going to use to substantiate the outcome. So the drive is now more towards outcome rather than the number that the chair has indicated. If they say that we are going to have 20 meetings, what is it that we are going to get out of the 20 meetings? Is it to upskill people? Is it to plan better? There's got to be an outcome. And they must indicate beforehand the evidence that will be used to prove that they have achieved the outcome that they have. So, yes, but there are many interventions that go in that. One of the criticisms that we have received previously from various departments is that
sense that we would have evaluated their agency, whereas when we audit, we still qualify them. And we face massive criticism. And what we normally do is, when we give them training on how we audit government information, we also talk about how we reduce the gap so that they get the same message from both of us and they can ask questions to both of us. A GSA and National Treasure, then we can respond to them, and they know exactly what is expected by the time. In terms of discussing on public information, or while on the APP, what I mentioned was that when we review the APP before the start of the year, remember I included that the APP review we do at a daily ad level. And that we do before the start of the financial year, the one that is to be implemented. So what we have at that time is a red flag. So we can only review useful levels of the product. When we test reliability, we test reliability of information achieved. We don't test because the reliability test has to do with whether the information is valid. Indeed, it belongs to the reported achievement is valid, the reported achievements are accurate, the reported achievements are complete. So on the APP, we don't have achievements, so we can't test reliability. We only test usefulness. So reliability we test only on information. And I think from the question that the chair raised with regard to how we support, and I think also honorable raised as well, in terms of supporting the department, we do give them constant training on how we audit government information, and we also share with them the criteria that we need to audit performance information. So that's the same criteria that we letter them on. We give it to them beforehand. So this is the criteria that they should be using when they develop their APP to say, because of the SMART principles, the AD is going to order on the SOPAIR target. If this target is time-bound, is it measurable, is it achievable, you know, all of those things. Because they know all of these things. They should be in this training year on year. So they should be in a position to effectively survey themselves. And it goes back to the general issue that we raised, that there is no consequence management. Year on year, we give the training, people don't deliver, and there's got to be consequence management. The supervisor, the manager must be in a position to say, what is the problem? If this person, does not want to do what they are supposed to be doing, or are they incapable, should we move them somewhere, or are they incapable of being here? So those are the questions that should go in there. In terms of the question on performance information, as I have said, the annual performance report of a department will indicate the target, what they have achieved, and what they haven't achieved. And in our audit report, we say, in terms of the annual performance report of the department, that is on page so and so, these are the findings that we have. So if we say that the information reported is not reliable, it means that what they have reported is not worth the paper that is done. You can't rely on it. If we say that what they have reported, if we don't have any findings relating to reliability on the performance information reported, it means we agree with what they have reported. So if they have reported that they only achieved 25%, it means we agree that they did achieve 25%. So it's absolutely important that when our audit report is read, in conjunction with the analysis of the department. If you read it in isolation, then yes, you definitely will miss it because the unqualified report on performance information will give the impression that they have achieved. Yet, that's not what we have been the meditation. And when we do the breathing, we will also have that. Whether that information is reliable or not. We also think about I just want to emphasize a little bit on the helicopter view that I was talking about. That one really relates to the general report. Remember the general report I indicated is a consolidation of the outcome, the whole subject. So it gives a helicopter view on the outcome. How many departments were qualified, detained, or had findings, or unqualified findings, or unqualified. How many departments and entities have findings relating to supply chain, supply information compliance, and rules and regulations? How many departments have root causes, for instance, that have to do with lack of skills, lack of oversight, lack of government structures, and lack of it just gives an overview of the outcomes and costs. It doesn't go into specifically into the individual department on the findings that came out of it. Now if I just go back with regard to another change question on the investigation. Who decides on performance audits, on investigations, etc.? In the office we have a committee that is represented by a business executive from every so I will be in a position to represent my portfolio, which is agricultural development, basic and higher education, and labor. And from the EME, from all of these documents, we will then review and see what are the spots, what are the areas that you need to focus on for a performance audit. We previously relied on departments to request performance audits, for instance, but obviously this is not forthcoming. Departments are not very keen on having performance audits because it exposes the procurement and the use of resources that they were not done efficiently, effectively, and economically. So they don't really support that. However, if an audit committee member, portfolio committee, has a request on performance audits, then we can go to the DG and say we have been requested to perform a performance audit and this is how we will go about doing it. Currently, as the AGSA, we propose to the department the focus area of performance audit because we haven't had specific requests on performance audit. With regard to investigations, the HASA hasn't performed investigations lately. We are focusing on performance audits and regulatory audits. As I indicated, if there are any indications of fraud or corruption, we would then highlight to management that any investigation is required on that specific area. However, if there is a specific request from the portfolio committee, that request can be sent to the AG himself, and the AG will then indicate whether we will, as an office, be in a position to do an investigation or not. But it's currently not a fair area for the AG to propose that function be sorted out. But we would like to focus more on the performance, audit on efficiency, the fitness and economy, and on the regularity audit. And I hope, in terms of my materiality scenario, I've been able to respond to an issue on the structure. There was an issue on information that is not reported. If I can just quickly go through that, as I said, I guess, in the ACP, there will be charges that
our view is that anything that the department does that is outside the APP is not budgeted for. So it should not form part of the reporting because it's not part of the mandate of the department. And how we deal with this service level of things that are not in the APP and that are not budgeted for, unfortunately it's something that is outside the APP and we focus on the APP, and I think it's something that we have to take back to the office so that we can then see how we address on the department. So basically this would be an authorized expenditure. That's what it is, because it's outside what is planned. So it should be reported as an authorized expenditure. But once again, agriculture would have a number of ad hoc expenditures that they will hide all of these things under as ad hoc, and it's then from part of the APP. As such. I think I didn't deal with the provisional.
We thank you for the superficial report. Referring to logistically, the regional offices is based outside of it's based in the provincial offices in Cape Town, there's also offices in the Eastern Cape, but it's all part of the national department, so they still use the vote of the national department. And the deficiencies which we have picked up is mainly in the accruals and commitment area of when they report is consolidated in the financial statements of the department. So you will find that the personnel in the regional offices mainly doesn't have the required skill and knowledge to account for accrual and commitment in terms of the financial reporting framework. Because when you talk about accrual, it's an accrual-based accounting where modified cash flows is a cash accounting, and they're not used to the accrual system of accounting. And that's why we said in that slide we refer to internal control deficiency is a lack of skill at regional offices due to them not fully understanding the accounting for accrual and commitment.
We want to follow up. We don't have time. This is the last turn we are taking. Honorable Spain, Honorable
Sultan.
But then on the internal audit, you say that they don't have internal audit, or they is not capacitated the internal audit. Is it not, and then the government has a central audit committee which is in station in residency. How does the justice partner if they have? Who can get that clarity?
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the answers. Back on performance audit and regulatory audit. If you do, it sounded to me the answer that it does happen. Would it be reported in the report, or will that only be going to the department? If a performance audit happens, will that be reported in the auditor general report? Or will it just be done and then going to the department itself in your management report if it's reported?
Thank you, sir. Before I think so. Good working. Okay. Maybe I mentioned this because I was away when the presentation was done. I've just gone through the presentation twice. For me, expenditure of the CISCAS is less about how many rands have been sent by this and that. Small, the return on that investment is about the socio-economic impact of that expenditure. Do you go in that direction when you do audit? In other words, the impact, social impact of the expenditure, is it central in the audit process, or is it just a by-the-way kind of, does it get a just by-the-way kind of attention? And if you find gaps, how do you record those gaps? Is this something immaterial or something very crucial? in terms of the mandate of a given department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of legislation where the audit committee, a department, two departments or three departments can have a combined audit committee, but they have to get permission of the National Treasury. Currently, all departments have their own audit committee. Department of Agriculture did have an audit committee, particularly under review, that previously they did have. But I think we just, when we reported, we rated them as not totally effective because of internal audit that wasn't really there. And the risk assessment that wasn't really there. So they currently have appointed an audit committee. And internal audit is still a challenge. In terms of the performing audit that we do. I've indicated that there is a standalone performance audit that we will do a report on, and there are those that we will incorporate into our regulatory audit. The performance audit, the standalone one, and if I can give an example, we did performance audit on consultants, and this was reported on the previous year. All the performance audits are tabled in Parliament separately. So if we clear performance audit, that is what will be tabled in Parliament. And then if we design procedures that will be incorporated in the regulatory, the findings will be reported through the regulatory audit report. In terms of the social economic impact, we incorporate in the regulatory audit, as we've indicated, the audit of predetermined objectives. And the discussion that is just had now is that that represents service delivery, and we're moving away from reporting on numbers but on outcomes, on impact. And there is a criteria that the National Treasury has set for the impact, and I think we might have had this response, what evidence would be used to measure the impact that a target or a measure has been implemented. While we audit a combination of the financial and service delivery, we also focus on the impact. So those efficiencies, if there are, will be reported in the audit report, again, depending on the materiality level that we have set for performance information. And through performance audit that we've just spoken to, where we audit procurement, whether procurement was done economically, effectively and efficiently, and utilization of the resources were done effectively, economically. We also report on that, and that report goes to Parliament. So we do that. However, as I indicated, the performance audit is normally on a focus area. So it will not be on the department in its entirety, it will be on a focus area. So, if all of us will do report on the impact and the outcome of the visualization of the resources. Because we have put an opinion on the financial, focus tends to be more to the financial. And as the chair has indicated, you find that management talks mostly about improvement on whether I was satisfied with the same, whether I have a better system or a better qualification. And it's never really on performance information. So if the department is held accountable on service delivery, which is generally a problem in the public sector, because service delivery is a problem in the public sector, they will say, no, but we have an unqualified report. And not looking at the service delivery, we see their reason for existence. The reason for existence is not financial. The reason for existence is
social.
We should be focusing on that. So that's the challenge that we have. But we do report, I believe that we do report efficiency on performance information. And perhaps when we engage a portfolio committee in the future, the major focus will be on performance of the financial and the financial. Interesting enough,
in a discussion that I had with a colleague of mine, we compared two scenarios. We said, in an unlikely event of a department having achieved 100% of their target, and you can see them that they are there, they have achieved them. Every little thing that they said to do, they did. But they did not have supporting documentation for them. But service delivery 100%. So that department will be displaced, but service delivery they have achieved 100%. And then we have another scenario where the department is unqualified, yet nothing was achieved in service delivery. In the eyes of, you know, normal person, the department with an unqualified report would be a better one. Whereas, in the eyes of the public, or those that benefit from the service, the department delivered the services with a disclaimer of opinion to be a better one. That means to say we receive something from the department. But we need to balance the two, because you can't have a department that cannot support their financials, and you can't have a department that does not have a service to be able to balance.
Thank you very much, General Sethi. We will continue to engage with you as we proceed, looking at the department. I think this is not the last interaction that we should have with you. Our work, the good performance of our work will rely much on our collaboration with yourself. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll then go to...
Chetan, can I just ask that the secretary follow up with all the students that we were supposed to be getting from the class, and there are other reports that we've asked for also in the previous minutes that we must receive from the department, so that we don't get behind what they do like to do is that they dump us one day with the whole set of reports like this, that we on a regular basis as we request reports to come from the department we receive them. They don't come after 6 months or a year and dump the whole lot on us.
Okay, we're trying to do that on your behalf, and that's why you see the program change, because when we put things on the agenda, we make sure that members receive documents in time and they're able to do it. We continue to bring the department to bring documents in time. Let's go to taking of invitations for nominate candidates to serve on matter of cultural education. Can we contact us to meet you?
Good afternoon, members. The process is the same as with the ARC, the board of the National Agricultural Marketing Council has two vacancies. So the committee has received a letter from the minister to send two people or two nominations. So I suppose the process will be the same as the last time. Members will approach people to submit CV to the committee, and then the committee from the list that they get, they can select two people that can be, whose names will be forwarded to the minister. The due date is the 12th of September. The requirements for the people who can serve on the board are on the Act. I think members have been, copies of the Act have been circulated. It's called the Market of Agricultural Products Act number 47 of 1996. The requirement for the people, I think, is section 4.2. So that's what the people, I don't know, if members have copies, then I don't have to go through the list of the kind of person who should apply to be in that market.
Maybe you can say you take your time. You're saying the people who are nominated, you can nominate more than two, or you can nominate only two, which are the majority that they are actually in the cartel. What is the
status? It's not a surety, actually, Chair. So I think you are welcome to send more than two names. The minister will decide who he puts on the board. It might be none of the names that the committee submits. So it's up to the committee. But the vacancy is for two people.
Thank you, Norma. Members of the CN.
No, it's just a question, sir. Honorable Nwabe. No, my question to the committee advisor, maybe I was not quite as enthusiastic when similar thing was happening. If you say we approach people really outside this house or among the committee members, that's why I need to respond. Should I go back to KZN and look who's sitting, or I should look around this, my fellow colleagues here?
South African, outside the country. Oh. South African, not KZN. South African, because we are national. Okay. Any other?
Chairperson, just looking at the program and knowing from staff experience, unfortunately, I thought about that. It's going to be very difficult if we are all with our constituencies on the 24th. Be back in Cape Town on the 25th of September, especially at that time of the morning. Most of us come from rural areas where we still have to travel a long way to get to an airport to fly here. Just on that, the meeting with the Danish, it's going to be embarrassing. Maybe we can't, otherwise we must delegate two or three people to meet with them that we know will be there. I'm still looking at this and talking about myself to come back from somewhere, and I'm sure the rest of the committee members, if we are in our constituency, it's going to be very difficult.
If we agree that we take oversight, we will be together, wherever we would be, then it would be very easy for us to make it. So, and if we take that, we are not going for oversight. We will see oversight in the time. Then that is when we can then start to entertain.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Because the issue is whether we take oversight so that the rest who can then be able to plan for the next committee program.
I'm glad it is. Chairperson, I just heard it saying that we can't touch the 24th. Is it meaning that they're not going to approve our oversight if we say we want to do the whole week? Because you just mentioned that, and I know in the past also, if there's a certain date and then the chairperson of chair says that you can't do a certain date, you won't be able to. I just need clarity on that, because otherwise we will only have oversight maybe on Tuesday, go home, and then get together again on the Thursday and Friday.
Maybe I missed the set once you were.
I think you were here to indicate that it will be a public holiday on the 24th and some reason for not being able to have activities on the 24th.
Yeah. In this case, this is as follows the side from.
On Wednesday, which was, is a holiday, so, and we have visitors which are coming on the 25th. So I'm saying, if we agree on oversight, that's calendar which is saying we are going on oversight. If we are going on oversight, we are going to do oversight on Tuesday, Wednesday. We go to our constituency or whatever, and then on 25th, then go to oversight, and on the 25th, oversight. So that is the issue. If we don't go to oversight, we will have committees, of course, we will meet with the we have the day to meet with the people where, because on Wednesday we'll be at the constituents, okay? On Wednesday we'll not be here. So that's the problem. Whether on Wednesday we're not expected to be here.
Hmm.
Okay. So whether we.
Which is the 24th?
Yes.
Yeah.
Whether we take over time or not. On Wednesday, we will not be here, and means that we can only come on for 25th from wherever we're coming to meet with the Danish committee. Yes, honourable member, let that be confirmed and
thank you.
Sir.
I don't think this is that has been identified is going to work. It's just a logistical nightmare. And we need to look at other things. And perhaps the staff should advise us as to what other things are available. Because it is an awkward holiday right in the middle of the week, being a Wednesday. You can't plan before, you can't plan after. Particularly when you have on the 26th visit of the Danish a parliament and the portfolio committee. It is a logistical nightmare for us. I think all members on this chair will tell you that if you have and I have oversight for 4 days, it has to be an identified time outside that week because of the inconvenience of that public holiday. Thank you.
Thank you. Actually, even before, I'm told that the workshop for rural development has been confirmed.
For what time?
So, you see, the issue is the chair of chair. Members are expected to go to trade. So even rural development will be affected.
But we're going to go to from the 25th day?
25th. From the 25th. Oh, okay.
It's not that time, Mark.
The workshop is not affected. That's not the 25th.
Is it this joint policy of the...
Is that only 20?
Because it is the whole issue of the workshop. We said that we should include water and sanitation because we needed to have the joint. So if we confirm with rural development, the water is not at...
I'm just looking at the date, 25th September, meeting with the Danish people, and then again on the 25th, going to follow the item, 9 o'clock, joint policy workshop. What is it that I'm not able to read well here? 25th September and 25th September, two different items. Running concurrently. Should the time for the 25th spend item, that is the joint workshop, should this have been revised to mean past 1 o'clock or something?
It was going to be that time. But you see, the issue is, after we have drafted this program, the one for parliamentary program, which says from the 22nd, it's a constituency day, and the fourth, the 3 days is oversight. And we have a holiday in the tree. So that's where the most confusion comes from. So, and I was saying that I'm told that the oversight of parliament will be dictated to you. It will not be from your choice. You have to apply. And now that we had applied for which day? 15th until, yes. So, and now we are adding allocated days for oversight. So those are the challenges that I'm putting forward to this committee today. We had applied. Before even we can respond to our request, they are saying all committees, your oversight week is this one. So, and in the program,
We had to do the work. That's why we put it on the agenda for consideration. Captain, I was supposed to do the makeup on the two side, because it's a important issue, and then just stick with the program as proposed there with the Danish on the Thursday, but I don't think we must make it a 9 o'clock. I'm speaking for myself. People will find it very difficult to be in time, especially if you've been in your constituency the previous day. We make it a bit late at 10 o'clock or Brexit is itself, and then the other joint portfolio meeting might not continue after that. I'm just talking about things that I've seen in the past. The portfolio committee, people mainly live in rural areas. It's difficult to travel and get an airport. We don't live in Johannesburg. We get in a flight that there's a flight every half an hour. We catch the flight that's available, and it's usually very difficult. So it's going to be difficult to do proper oversight. We also can't go up for oversight for a day and a half and think we're going to do a proper job. I would propose that we then re-submit and ask the Parliament for another week that we can do it and do proper work. We must go and do proper oversight. We can't do a day and a half and come back and then go for a day. It's going to be extremely difficult.
We come back here to Cape Town for the portfolio committee and the meeting with the Danish people. So I'm not sure where you'll get the flight from when you finish the heritage. The export of love, we're going to get a flight wherever in the rural area to here again. So I'm sorry, I'm just complicating it.
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, listen. I was going to maybe support the proposal as it is, because it could be confusing. Although I do not stay in the areas, but what you're saying makes sense to me. From a house to airport is almost a new endeavor, but I'm not going anyway. I understand what is being raised here. It's still valid. That's all. Thank you.
The microphone makes sense. I'm just going to say, if we want to conduct oversight in that session, I thought we would be submitting a proposal for a number of days. The 24th is disorganizing this order. I was tempted to agree with Chief Mandela when he was saying, let's look for other dates, but you do some kind of pressure chair, so that with the chair of chair, so that the dates are not in December. This is September, so the number of things as we're saying. I think if we do oversight, let's do it, and then we will finish. We start on Tuesday until Friday. I'm practical about going to Naha, come back, and all that. Let Naha be part of the running program of a particular week. So I wanted to support the chief on that one. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Have to establish on the issue of oversight. We have 4 days for oversight, isn't it? Am I correct? Forget what happens when. Let's just establish the rule there. Do we have 4 days or 3 days?
4 days.
Then I want to move chair, perhaps for the thinking of where do we sacrifice as members of the portfolio committee to ensure that this becomes a success. On the table is that we look for a date totally separate falling outside this week, and we consider that. The second to that is we see the Danish delegation on the Thursday. Having done that,
we go on oversight. And we take the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we do oversight. And it's something that ought to be considered and looked at. It is doable by honorable members. Or we look at a date pre that, which is sitting at third proposal because it is complicated. You then take a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday as your week, and then you have the public holiday, and then come and see the Danish delegation here. So those are the three issues we have to look at and agree on what the way forward is. Thank you.
Chairperson, I would love to agree with certain proposals. However, it doesn't incorporate the joint policy workshop. I think the joint policy workshop between ourselves and rural development is very important, and we need to have that type of workshop. I'm concerned they've already agreed to the dates for the workshop. And if we indicate now that we are not available that few days, it will delay the process, because of the week after that, there will be a recess period. And if we come back, that workshop might not even happen. So I primarily support those to the proposal that will include that policy workshop.
Let me check, because you have a problem to work on Saturday, Sunday. You don't have.
I don't.
Which one is?
I don't.
That's the first one, with Saturday and Sunday one.
Can I
separate you? Yes.
It's on this one.
Okay. Listen, I don't have a problem with one Saturday and Sunday. The problem is going to become, because we're going to have two Saturdays and Sundays. If we want to do Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday as the first vulnerable Monday, and then have the Wednesday and then the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that joint, it's going to be two meetings. And that specifically is going to be a problem for me personally. But working on Saturdays and Sundays as a rule is not a problem.
Yeah, If I work alone, I can work every day. But the problem for me, I anticipate, is that we are not going to the provinces as the committee and sitting provinces alone as the committee. It's an oversight. We are going to meet the people. But for me, that's the major problem. We are going to meet the people who have their own commitments on Saturdays and Sundays. And I think we must take into consideration that as the committee. I think we'll create a lot of problems for people. A good intention may be paralyzed by unavailability of people that who want to interact with working towards that. I may be wrong, but this is what I think will create problems for us as a committee. But if the majority of the committee members are of that mind, then I will fall in line. Thank you.
I would suggest that because we are going to have the mixing of chairs, I should establish whether I can get this outside the day. Of course, because even rural development will be affected, because if they don't go to, if they remain here, means that they will not go out over that. They will be affected. So whether are we going to get another day? And if that is the case, we'll then tell the program the way it was.
where you will serve on the 25th, we'll meet with the Spanish people here in Cape Town, and then later we'll go into a planning conversation. But if we don't have faith, if we don't have faith, we will negotiate to celebrate the Cape Day wherever in the province that would be, so that we would be there as a community and we'll go to that, we'll celebrate the Heritage Day there. And then we'll then have 2 days to go oversight, which it will then be Eastern Cape, look at Sipagala and Mleha. Then the other provinces we might see them in the next time if you get other people. Is it workable? No.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. I think the guiding principle here amongst us is that whichever way we do it, there are some sacrifices that have got to be made. Especially when it comes to a joint vendor. That is when we have got to do something together with other portfolio companies. So my take is that we should allow you to, you've heard how people feel, but I think it's only fair to you and to the people who serve that will allow you the latitude to find what is most convenient and what will work. Yeah. The issue of celebrating the 24th, just the very principle, I don't think it actually overrides the work that we have got to do as committee. So I want to think that people have got an option to be or not to be at a given point of celebration. If that would serve the same convenience from coming here, you know, where, or going somewhere on the 25th. Thank you.
I'm not sure that we have seen that there's an overlap between the time that we will see the Danish and the time of the workshop on the
21st.
It will be covered when we interact with the rhythm development that will start here.
I don't know, at the instruction of the chief, I would have to find an ox. Anyway. Okay.
Thank you.
So, but then, I think I must do this on behalf of you, the committee. Was advised by the minister to not work province for the female for the farm. Entrepreneur farmer, entrepreneur women of the year. And then Honorable Tumbana, Honorable Saiz, and myself attended and sat at the committee. And there was a lot of the committee was showered with appreciation and honor and all that. So it was a very good gathering and your presence was appreciated. Committee. Thank you very much.
And you forgot to tell us the overall winner.
Who was the winner?
Oh, yes. The overall winner was or is Ivy Mzamo from Eastern Cape. It's a secret place called Kirkwood in Hundred River.
Okay.
They received the award as the overall winner of that competition, if I may. So that's the question. Thanks.
From your province, Chief.
Yeah.
From the ferry.
We will actually send the congratulatory message as a committee to the overall entrepreneur. He has made a stop. And we must talk about it.
Yeah. Yes, there will also be a member statement. One member will read a statement on our behalf. Honorable Tumwan, this afternoon.
On that note, I think we must have our first, we call, oversight in the Eastern Cape. There's, I believe there's a farm where a woman is involved in the Langkloof area where she's producing protea flowers, but she doesn't have water rights to make use of the river that's going through the farm. But I will give you more information next week.
Can we also inform our counterpart in the center or wherever we go?
Yes, we are going to do that. Because we'll need to be joined by the portfolio committee
in the provinces. Yes.
What our staff, because if you still remember, we said when we have got to oversight, we need to work on the detailed program and we get our officials to go and do the state work, particularly research people, to do the state work so that when we arrive there, we are not being told lies, that we come here and lie in parliament and people like that. So we said that we put that in the field. Which means that the sooner we resolve the case, the better, so that it can then allow the researcher to do the work. And we have received through the week the letter from one disabled person around here in Western Cape, wanted the committee to assist intervening on the challenge that he has on farm. So the researcher is working on she will be visiting the area. In the next meeting, we'll get the feedback. How far we... Okay, thank you very much. Lunch is set.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.